Welcome to the Adult Children Voices Across America Speakers Meeting Podcast. You may attend this meeting live on Thursdays at 6 p.m. Pacific Time using the Zoom ID 848-520-80640, password 061120. For more information about adult children of alcoholics and dysfunctional families, visit adultchildren.org.
The following speaker share from Veronica A. was recorded on March 14th, 2024.
Thank you so much, everyone, for being here. I'm going to go ahead and set myself a timer so I can fit in all the juicy goodness that is ours to explore today. I am so grateful to see each and every one of you. And if you would like to go ahead and turn your camera on, it doesn't matter if you're moving around, it doesn't bother me. And I think we're all able to regulate ourselves enough to take care of ourselves if we see someone on the screen that we don't resonate with their actions. So I'm going to start with some breaths because I can feel myself fumbling a little bit, and I know that to be a sign that I'm not regulated. And if you practice mindfulness, you might also like to join us in some breaths. Also, I'm Veronica. I'm an adult child and my own loving parent and a member of this program. So one of my favorite, most useful tools in this whole recovery journey is mindfulness. And so if you'd like to follow the sound of my voice, connecting with a sense of safety in this moment, whatever safety means for you. Maybe it's a stuffed animal. Maybe it's your feet on the floor. That brings you a sense of peace, whether it's a plant or a painting or a favorite pet. And to just keep coming back to our center and our breath. And the fact that we're alive, despite everything we've been through, despite all of the hardship, we made it. We're here. And we're a room of over 60 people who have come here to heal. And we know that not everybody in the world has this intention the way that we do. But we can connect with our own intention to be here in a space of fellowship and support. We can feel how cared for we are by our trusted servants. There are more than a handful of people who have devoted their time and energy to make sure that we have a space that feels supportive and safe. And we're not alone. None of us are alone right now in our desire to heal. And we are the most resilient beings that humanity has ever created. And each one of us deserves to feel proud for everything that we've been through and getting here. And when we were walking through the steps at the beginning of our meeting, what really resonated for me, what I heard very loudly, was conscious contact with our higher power. So ACA is a spiritual program based on action coming from love. And if in this moment it feels loving to you to consciously make contact with your higher power, I invite you to do that and know that you are doing so in the company of 64 other sacred souls who have made a choice to be here to touch peace, to find something that resembles peace in their lives. And I know that for me, I didn't know that peace was even a concept until I was 17. And I remember the very moment that peace came on my radar. And it was well into my teenage years. And I'm going to share that story with you. I'm going to share my experience, my strength, and my hope. And I look forward to hearing from you all afterwards. And I just want to, right at the start, invite outreach. This is not a self-help program, and I am extremely open to outreach. My number is in my name, and we can walk together, can answer each other's questions, hear each other's stories. I do outreach on WhatsApp because I live in Costa Rica. So hello from Costa Rica. And I grew up in Connecticut. And if anybody else wants a tool, that is one that I'm using right now, I focus on my exhalations. And when we focus on exhaling long and slow, that activates the parasympathetic nervous system, the side of our nervous system that's like a parachute. It like helps us gently float down. I'm going to do that 3 more times. If you want to sigh together, we can do that. So if you want, meet you at the bottom of your next exhalation, we can breathe in together. When we breathe together, our hearts start to entrain and resonate. We breathe in together. It's an act of defiance and revolution. Yawns are a sign that your nervous system is relaxing and releasing stress. Breathing in one more time together. Sighing out all the tension, all the pain, all the anxiety, all of it. Just release it, blessing it. Thank you so much, anxiety, for helping me stay alive. Thank you. I needed you. I still need you. And I'm grateful. And I need all of you. I am so grateful for the 60 other people who are here tonight, because I know that my story matters, because yours does too. And I am the adult child of an alcoholic family. Both of my parents are also adult children. Their parents were alcoholics. And my dad was the alcoholic in our family. My mom is not an alcoholic. She was very straight-laced, a Polish immigrant who moved to the United States as a child. And I think she was just always too scared to be a person. She was really just trying to survive the whole time, which was hard given my dad's constant abuse. And it's always easy to qualify that it wasn't physical abuse, but that doesn't diminish the pain and suffering. In fact, I think somehow it would have been easier if there had been physical violence, because I could have pointed to something and said, this is happening and it's not okay. Instead, I took all of the insults and gaslighting as normal. And my dad is a narcissist. That means that he has a gaping well of shame inside of him where his sense of self-worth should be. And he relies on manipulating other people in order to feel validated as a human. And growing up under his thumb, it was his way or the highway. And every single night, as soon as it came 5 p.m., he would start to drink. And I thought that was normal. I didn't realize it was the alcohol that made him crazy. I thought he was just like that at nighttime. And then one time my mother pointed out that he had been drinking hard liquor and that that was how she knew he was going to get really crazy. And that was when it started to click for me that he was an alcoholic. And my role in the family was the hero child. I am an older sister. My brother is 3 years younger than me. When he was born, I looked at him and could tell what he needed and actually verbalized it to my parents. And I remember he was crying and upset. And I remember going, telling my parents, you just need to smile at him and play with him. Just like get close to him and capture his attention. And they laughed at me and they demeaned me, but like acting like I didn't know what I was talking about. And that was when I knew that I had to become his parent. I didn't know consciously that that's what I was doing, but it became clear that he wasn't going to get his needs met from these people, the instruments of our existence. And I knew what he needed. And so that honestly is how I survived, by parenting my brother. And the abuse continued. It was a war zone. My household was a war zone. And like my parents constantly trying to destroy one another, yelling just all the time. And something that I found out through this program, actually, because I've been on my recovery journey for the last 2 years, getting to know myself, shedding the false self, awakening my true self through inner child work and outreach and working the steps, reading the literature, coming to meetings, I discovered just a couple weeks ago that I am autistic. I have always been autistic. My brain did not develop in the typical way. And that means that I have very high sensory needs. I struggle to regulate myself because my brain doesn't have the full capacity that other people have to regulate itself. And I'm 33. And so I have, and I just found out 2 weeks ago that I'm autistic. So I've spent 33 years not understanding how to regulate my nervous system. And because I was so dysregulated by the constant yelling, the constant criticism, just belittling, I never got to be a person. I never got to do things that I enjoyed. I never got to enjoy things. I remember, I've been doing yoga now for 15 years. And I remember when I was like 14 or something at the youth center out in the after school program, they taught us yoga. And I just remembered today how much I loved that experience. And I heard somebody else talk about how when they first tried yoga as a teenager, they like picked it up and they never put it down. All the things that I liked didn't matter because I was just trying to survive. When I was 9, my parents finally divorced. And I remember my mom saying to me, "We're going to get a divorce." And just being the most excited possible because I felt like things were finally going to change. And I wasn't going to have to be the middle person anymore, trying to make peace between mom and dad, trying to create stability in the home so that I could finally relax. What happened was my dad convinced my mom to split custody. The judge gave her full custody. Rightfully so. He was an alcoholic narcissist. And so I had to spend every Monday and Tuesday at dad's house, every Wednesday and Thursday at mom's house, every other Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, we would alternate back and forth. That was my life from 9 until 15. I was miserable. Living with my dad was a nightmare. And militaristic doesn't begin to describe who he is, his character. He would actually create military drills where my brother and I would have to stand at attention in front of him until he decided what he wanted to say, and then we could go. When I was 11, my dad tried to kill me. My brother and I played a prank on him for April Fool's Day, and his reaction was to try and suffocate me. And I didn't realize until this year that that act was an act of trying to end my life and that it was domestic violence. It took me that long to come out of denial about the things that I lived. And the worst part of that was I had to keep living with him after he was arrested for child abuse. My mom still didn't protect us, even then, from him. So deep in denial was she. And my teenage years, from that moment, from 11 up until 15, were just a black hole of despair, anger, and depression. And when I was 15, my dad was arguing with my brother about how we never got to his house early enough on Christmas Day. And one of the qualities of an autistic person is directness. There's no filter. We don't have a sense of social norms and like these unspoken rules of communication. We just say it like it is. And so what I blurted out in that moment, a 15-year-old child, was, aren't you just supposed to be grateful that we're here at all? I was confused. I genuinely thought that's what parents were supposed to do. They were supposed to love their kids enough just to care that they were there. But that devolved into a multiple hour tirade against my character and how I was ungrateful because my dad needed to destroy me so that he felt better. And him and my stepmom belittled and attacked me verbally until I blacked out from anger and rage, just like trying to defend myself. And the next thing I know, my dad is saying to me, I'm going to swear here because it's a quote. This is what he said to me, pack your shit and get the fuck out. And so at 15, I packed what I could into a bag and I walked across town in the middle of the night to my friend's house. And in the morning, I called my stepmom to ask her to bring my backpack to school because it had been too heavy to carry. And she said, did you ask your dad if you could stay out on a school night? Nobody but me remembered being kicked out of the house. And in that moment, I felt so many complex emotions, but the one that I remember was relief, because at last the truth had come out. My father did not care about my life, even in the slightest. And I stopped pretending. I wasn't going to play the game anymore. I was done being the adult. And in a couple months, I got a job. My mom lost her job, so I was paying for the electricity and the food. And that was when whatever semblance of a childhood I had ended. And I went about my life like any teenager. I don't know how I'm not an alcoholic. I don't know how I didn't fall into drugs and just throw away my future. I don't understand how I can sit here today with two college degrees and three businesses that I started myself and that I continue to run, and a healthy, loving relationship with a man who adores me. It doesn't make sense to me. I feel so humbled by this life that I am privileged to lead. I don't know how I survived the depression and the anxiety. The only thing I can point to is my higher power. There is no explanation. I had no support at all. There were no relatives. I had one grandma. She didn't speak English. I had no aunts and uncles. My cousins were a decade or more older than me, and they never connected with me ever. They don't know anything about me. There are two of them. No friendly neighbors, no kind teachers that took me under their wing. Not a single soul came to me and said, "Oh my God, can I help you?" I just figured out how to human on my own with a disability. It really makes no sense. All I can point to is my higher power. And when I was 17, I was raised Christian. We went to church every single Sunday, and spiritual abuse was part of it. The fact that my parents were telling me that I needed to go to church, and they were forcing me to sit there every single Sunday, and then on the side, abusing me, demeaning my intelligence, telling me that I was worthless, that I should be ashamed of myself. Just destroying, tearing me down. Every single time I felt happy or excited about something, cut it down. Every single time I was enthusiastic or inspired, cut it down. It was as if my light threatened them. They couldn't dare to believe that there could be goodness and light in me, because it would have meant that they had to change the way that they saw the world. And now we're getting into the strength section of our talk. We've gone through some experience there. And it really is amazing to me that there can be light in so much darkness. Because I struggled for years against suicidal ideation. I just constantly felt such relief going into this place of, well, maybe I'll fall down the stairs and break my face, or maybe that car will come and end my life. And somehow I kept going and found my way to this program. I started sharing about when I was 17 and I went to the library, and I had felt something true when I was a child. When I was like 5 years old, I felt this fire for the Holy Spirit, felt this connection with Christ and this idea of Holy Spirit. I felt it in me. I can remember feeling that. I have something called alexithymia. Alexi means no words, and themia is this disorder. It's actually the most overlooked mental health condition, emotional health condition. It means that I don't have words for my emotions and sensations. Alexithymia. And as an autistic person, I really struggle to connect with what's happening inside of my body. But I remember that feeling of being on fire for Christ. I told my parents I wanted to be a nun, and they said, "No, you don't. That's not what you want." But I remembered something true when I was 17, and I had no idea how I was going to keep going. So I went to the library and I took out this stack of books, a good stack, all different world religions, Judaism, Rastafarianism, Hinduism, and more. I stopped when I got to Buddhism, because they were talking about suffering and pain. And that was a religion I could get on board with, because my life was so full of pain and suffering. I was actually suffering from fibromyalgia, which I didn't find out about until I was in my 20s, because I didn't have the words to tell anybody that I was in physical pain all the time. And when I was reading about Buddhism, I found out about this concept of mindfulness. And there's a Zen master named Thich Nhat Hanh. And Thich Nhat Hanh wrote this book called Being Peace. And that was when the concept of peace entered my life. Again, completely by chance. Something told me to go to the library. Something told me to take out all of these books. Something guided me this whole way, this golden thread of grace that has just kept me alive. Because nobody around me, there were no humans trying to keep me alive. The humans that were tasked with my survival were trying to end it as best they could. Without appearing abusive, they were very concerned with their appearances. My parents would always, you know, do what they had to do to look good enough instead of actually loving and cherishing and respecting me. And so after I found mindfulness, I was back at my dad's house because I tried to be a good daughter for a long time, like 10 years. And I was sitting in his living room and he started to yell at me out of nowhere. Just absolutely total insanity. Just started yelling at me. I remember being like, oh yeah, I have a choice. I don't have to yell back. I don't have to get angry. And I hit pause on the conversation. I got up and I walked out. And that was the beginning of the rest of my life. Because what I did is I walked and I breathed. And I took a step and I breathed. And I took another step and I breathed. And suddenly I realized I'm not angry anymore. I feel free. That's how emotions work. I get to decide how I feel. Now, it wasn't immediate because as an adult child, I am addicted to control. When my parents were fighting and my nervous system was fizzing out like an overloaded circuit and like frizzled and frazzled and frayed, I needed my parents to stop yelling. And so I had the very same urge to try and make peace between them, to try and get involved and smooth things out. I became addicted to that because that is how my brain formed. Its circuits became formed in this environment where I needed to take care of everything around me because it was a mess. And I wasn't getting the peace and calm and rest that our bodies deeply need. All humans need rest. And thankfully, mindfulness is very much about learning to identify when feelings arise, name them, and sit with them. And so that is a practice that I have been doing for 15 years. And it works, friends. It really works. Because of the physical pain that I was experiencing, I ended up getting a surgery, which went wrong. And when I was 20, I was unable to walk up a flight of stairs. I was in so much physical pain. Every single morning, the first thing I felt was pain. Pain, 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 all the time. And that led me to yoga. And once I discovered that I could go sit on this rectangle of plastic, rubber, and just be with myself, that I discovered that that was an option, that I could actually just be with myself, that was when the healing really started to happen. And that was in 2010. And I kept exploring my spirituality. At that point, I couldn't say the word God. I was so traumatized by religion and spirituality and all of it. I was so turned off. And the little by little cracking open of my body and my heart and my mind and my spirit began to happen as I went to those classes, just hoping to be able to walk. I just wanted to walk. I wanted to not have to worry about how much energy it was going to take to go from my bed to the bathroom, to the fridge, to the desk, and back to my bed again. I wanted to be able to just not think about those things. Because I was getting an architecture degree. I was going to be an architect. I was going to change the world. I was going to make this a sustainable, safe place for humans. And eventually, I discovered this concept of the goddess, this divine feminine power that nobody had ever taught me about. And I started to come out of my shame. I started to recognize that maybe there was actually something divine and holy in me. Maybe I was actually sacred. And that was a total contrast to the degradation and humiliation that was a part of my abandonment. So the neglect and abandonment that I experienced was very much a total isolation from humans, except to be criticized. What very quickly happened was I started to grieve and recognize that I wasn't okay. It was more than the physical pain. I was also really depressed and anxious. And I found my way to Costa Rica. I was lucky enough to be able to create a life for myself here. And within 6 months of leaving the United States, that was when my trauma started to pour out of every single orifice in my body. It was like the door, the floodgates opened, my brain unlocked. And what happens is our brains are so intelligent that they will compartmentalize and sequester anything that's a threat to us. So the big memory that my dad had sexually abused me couldn't come out when I was in the United States and when he was a phone call away and he could just show up at my door, because that wasn't safe. I wasn't safe enough in the US. I needed an ocean between me and my abusers before my brain was like, okay, yeah, okay, they're not going to get us. We're safe. Here's all your trauma now. And so that was when I discovered complex PTSD or CPTSD. And that was in 2017. And that was when the healing really started. That was when I started to look at shame and guilt. Shame and guilt were like these two guard dogs that were always with me and would like draw me into the darkness. They kept like looking back at me and I was like, what are you guys doing here? Why do I have shame and guilt? Why do I feel shame and guilt? That's crazy. I'm awesome. I love myself. Look at me. Look how good I am. I have a degree. I have 2 degrees. Oh my God. What are you doing here, shame and guilt? So I followed them and discovered I didn't love myself. I didn't. And in fact, I thought I was pretty despicable. I thought there was something fundamentally flawed and wrong with me. And I just kept following that peace that I felt in those first mindful breaths. Those first moments of sovereignty where I got to decide how I felt and nobody else could affect me were what kept me going down the path. And that was the light that I kept walking into the darkness. I wasn't aware that I was walking towards the light. I just knew that what I had been living was impossible to survive. And a few years down the CPTSD healing journey, where I learned about the nervous system and the window of tolerance, that was when I met somebody who talked to me about ACA and SLA. She was telling me about both programs. And at the time, I was beginning a relationship, which was very much reactionary. It was like, this person is giving me attention. I need attention because I don't feel like a valid human being. Attention is validation, and that must be love. And so I went down a hole with him and quickly realized that something was very wrong. And that was when I came to my first ACA meeting, when I found this program. And now we get to talk about hope. I never in all my years felt like I belonged anywhere. I never felt like anybody cared about my suffering, anybody understood me or wanted to hear my story. And coming to these rooms, my first meeting, I just cried the whole time. And I felt so much hope. Like, okay, if people know what's wrong with me, they must know how to fix it. So I'm going to keep coming back. And I had already been experiencing progress. I had already healed my fibromyalgia by becoming literate with my emotions. I bought a book called The Language of Emotions. Spectacular. I can't recommend it highly enough because it's literally a Bible, a dictionary that says, you know, okay, I'm feeling anger. So that means that a boundary has been broken and I need to use my inner fire to restore that boundary. For example, I learned about grief. I learned about sadness. I mostly sat with grief. Healing my CPTSD was mainly about grieving. And it's funny to talk about grief in the middle of a segment on hope because they seem so opposite. But there's something about grief. It's the river of all souls. When we grieve, we drop into this expansive oceanic experience where what it feels like to me is like I disappear, I dissolve completely. And that's what's so scary about it. And every single time I have dropped into that river and just totally immersed myself in the pain of the things that I have lost, what I should have gotten and didn't get, a good old step four grief inventory, I come out buoyed up, lifted up by something. Like, oh my God, I can feel that and still be okay. When the tears flow, usually it's like 5 minutes of intense body shaking, racking grief of just completely losing myself in the pain and sorrow of not being able to get back my childhood. I will never get back those early developmental years. My autism could have been healed if I had caregivers who actually noticed me. If I had people who said, you know, she's really melting down right now. And that doesn't seem like normal. So maybe we could help her. And like, perhaps we could get some advice from people. Or, you know, she seems really sensitive, like more than average. Maybe there's something wrong. But now I get to be that parent for myself. Now I get to bring stuffed animals with me everywhere I go because I need soft, squishy things. My nervous system needs that. I get to practice my emotional sobriety by noticing when I'm triggered. That's step one. That takes a lot of work. And then soothing myself. Noticing I'm triggered. Okay, I'm at all triggered. Okay, now identifying the trigger, figuring out what it is that's triggering me. That's another step. And then what do I do about it? How do I soothe myself? Do I need to go outside and get some fresh air? Do I need to drink some water? Yes. And this program has given me so much language for learning how to relate to myself and all of my many parts. I have this little family here of stuffed animals that I use every day, morning and night, to help me connect with myself. And the bear is my loving parent. And when I hold the bear, I am the child and I am activating my inner loving parent. The monkey is my monkey mind, the inner critic. And this sweet baby and I have done so much work together. I actually feel affection towards my inner critic now. I see its role in my survival. And then these other three creatures are my inner gifted child, who is an infant and is wildly intelligent and very sensitive and just wants to know she exists and matters. And the duck is my inner 7-year-old who can feel the divorce coming and knows that she's being abandoned and is absolutely horrified about that. So I hold on to her when things are hard in my relationship and I feel like my boyfriend's going to leave me and like he doesn't love me. And I just go and I hold my inner child when those thoughts come now. And I don't react anymore because I'm focusing inwards. I'm focusing on myself. I respond from a place of resourced presence now. And then we have the fox, who is our inner 15-year-old, who has been rejected by her father completely and totally abandoned by him. And we were abandoned by our mom very early on, even before the divorce. My mom left before she left the marriage. And before that, she left me and my brother. Emotionally, obviously, of course. And I just, on a daily basis, I just check in with all these parts of myself. And I go about creating a sense of self. I know this program works. I know I am recovering, because where I used to feel a gaping black hole where my sense of self should be, now I know who I am. And I get to focus now on feeling free to be me. Because up until now, my life has been about playing the part, being the hero child, keeping everybody okay so that I could have some semblance of peace, putting on the masks in society that everybody expected me to put on. A big part of autism is masking. So I don't naturally empathize with people, but I taught myself how to, because I was desperate for connection. I want to share about how I've worked this program, because in case there are any newcomers in the room, this could serve as a little map. And it's what's worked for me. Everybody needs different things. For me, I needed a sponsor. I needed someone who was singular, like a one-directional relationship where she is just pouring into me all the time. And I didn't have to worry about the reciprocity of relationships that really stresses me out and I end up overgiving. So I needed to find a sponsor. That was one of the early things. I actually got two sponsors, because why not? And that ended up being good, because the person that I thought was going to be the better sponsor, actually, it wasn't. And then I did work the yellow book. The yellow workbook has, it's one of the chapters of the big red book, but with space to write in it. And I went through a workshop hosted by the World Service Organization. I don't think they do these workshops anymore, because we went through a step each week over 18 weeks, and it was really intense. And so I don't think they do that anymore, because it wasn't a great way to go through the steps. But it was good for me, because I actually find the traditional ACA steps to be a big shame trap for me. I can fall into shame spirals very easily if anybody suggests that my behavior is that I have defects that's not a helpful way for me to think about the steps. Step six, for example, in Tony A's step six, it's about opening up to the possibility of asking for help and healing from our higher power. So I'm glad I went through the Yellow Book really quickly because I got to understand all that literature and do like a surface skimming of the steps. And now I've gone back, I assembled a group of four other ACAs, and we are going through the Tony A's 12-step workbook together. And we're on, I think, like month 16. We started last January, and we're just on step six. And so we meet every Sunday and we go for an hour through the questions in that Tony A's workbook, which is not officially conference recognized literature, but you can find it in the fellowship around. And I did work through the Loving Parent Guidebook in the middle of all that, and I did it on my own, which I don't recommend. This is not a self-help program. The healing comes when we step out of isolation. And so I'm still waiting to work through the Loving Parent Guidebook with the focus it deserves. I chose to get the steps under my belt first because I haven't done the steps in any other fellowship. In and around all of that is outreach. I put my number here on the screen for outreach because it has been the single most healing thing in the world for me. To know that when I am in my deepest darkness, I can pick up the phone and talk to a human. It sounds so simple, but it has truly transformed my life. As I speak about that now, I actually look back on where I was a year ago and I notice a change. If I were going through a dark moment, I would still rely on outreach, but I don't use it as much anymore because it was more important at the beginning of my journey. I think that stepping out of isolation really is the work of an adult child, because what we learned, if I may be so bold, is that the world is not a safe place and that our lives are not safe in the hands of other people, which is a travesty and such an injustice. Babies and children need safety first in order to develop. That's it, period. So when we can hold spaces for each other in meetings, that's a great way to do it. If I don't feel safe reaching out to individuals, great, keep going to meetings. But there really is no substitute for that back and forth of, here's my story. You respect that? You honor that? You're grateful I shared that with you? Oh my God, I matter. What happened to me was real. I'm getting goosebumps just feeling the power of that validation. And we also get to practice using our radar for who's a good person for us to do outreach with. I have prioritized outreach with women because I've experienced a lot of sexual abuse in my life, and it doesn't always feel safe for me to outreach with men. I don't want that to stop anybody who feels a connection and wants to reach out, though, because I'm growing and I'm learning that I am safe. I'm learning to be that source of safety for myself with my inner parenting, learning to regulate myself. I think the laundry list workbook is an awesome resource too. I haven't worked it yet. That will be in like 5 years, I think, at the rate I'm going. This is very deep. It's really deep. And speaking and sharing, this has been such a journey. I'm so grateful to Voices Across America for this space. It's been such a nourishing place to be on the receiving end, and now being able to serve by sharing my story, it's so nourishing and nurturing, and I really hope that I've earned the privilege of your time and attention tonight. I trust that my higher power has given me the right words to bring peace and strength and hope to your lives, and I'm really looking forward to hearing your shares. If I were to choose a topic, I'm seeing resilience in the chat. Somebody sent that the word resilience to me at the beginning of our meeting. So perhaps that's been the theme of today. But thank you all so much. I can't wait to hear your shares.